Tirubal for the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. And who is one of the principal pioneers of the movement of Lord Chaitanya in the modern world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As we know, was the son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. It is said that Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur was praying for special help and special assistance. Rupa Vilas Prabhu wrote a biography and he named it Ray of Vishnu. And a ray of Vishnu means that when a personality appears in this world who is especially empowered, who is especially a representative of the potency of the Supreme Lord, basically a Shakti Avesh avatar, a personality who is invested with special potency of the Lord to fulfill a special mission. There is no doubt that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was an extraordinary personality in all regards. From the very onset of his life, appeared as the son of a great exalted Mahabhagavat like Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. In Jagannath Puri, staying there, stories like the Jagannath cart stopping in front of the house and just not moving. And then the family would go on the chariot to take darshan, and the garland fell on the child. A sign of Lord Jagannath. Also how the child appeared with the umbilical cord wrapped like a Brahmin thread around the neck. So these are all like some early signs that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was not an ordinary person. Very soon that became apparent because of his incredible ability to absorb scripture very quickly. He became very, very learned in scripture. And he was trained by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur to assist him like in proofreading. From his early age, he was trained in publishing work, and something he carried on. So there's many more stories maybe about the early life, but I would like to focus in this talk more on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta as the preacher, as the one who, the acharya, the missionary, because it was really impressive. From Srila Prabhupada we heard that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta especially liked dioramas, right? Doll exhibitions which would express a particular pastime of the Lord or a particular philosophical point. It's important to note that he did this on a very large scale. In Calcutta, on the Maidan, which is a large central park in the near the Victoria Memorial. There in Calcutta, on the Maidan, he arranged for what was called the theistic exhibition. And that exhibition would spread out over many, many acres of land. And there were many, many dioramas depicting different points of philosophy, different pastimes, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was very strategic about preaching. He also had around his own theistic exhibition an additional cultural exhibition with displays of the culture of all the states of India. So just to attract mundane people who might not come for transcendental knowledge, but who would come to see the culture. In this way, he was throwing his net out wide and used preaching tactics to reach people. There, on that theistic exhibition on the Maidan, 1 acre was reserved for a map of India. And that map was made in relief. It had been made with cement, so it projected this big map on 1 acre. And on that map, he showed the entire route that Lord Chaitanya went on his tour of South India, just to establish the fame of Lord Chaitanya and to establish his that particular route that he took. He depicted that map. That mission to establish Lord Chaitanya was a mission which he carried on over the years, because on that same route in South India, in the actual places, he established temples with the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, just to establish various tirthas. Because by establishing tirthas, one is establishing the worship of a particular personality. So in this way, he wanted to establish the worship of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout India. It wasn't just that, yes, let us remember the parikrama that Lord Chaitanya made as a nice meditation. No, there was a deeper meditation behind the whole thing, a deeper strategy. Let us spread the worship of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No, you are the man. Okay. Huh? Well, he made it good for the camera. He's Mr. Mayapur TV. It's like, you know. Thanks. Okay. Yeah. I'll. The thing is, see, when you put it down, then I also go down. So that's why up a little up is good for my back. You know, but then I have to sit straight. I'll sit straight. Yeah. Is it good?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll sit. You want some powder also? It's usually what they do for the TV cameras. Okay, I'm sorry for that. Jeez. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was trying to establish the worship of Lord Chaitanya everywhere. We see that here in Sridhar Mayapur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very much occupied with parikrama. Was it that he just had a special liking for these kind of excursions? No. Maybe he did, but I don't think that was the main motive. The main motive was that Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur had discovered the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had done so by scrutinizingly studying many scriptures and historical records, and ultimately he had determined that place. And then he had also brought Jagannath Das Babaji to that place to confirm it, because Jagannath Das Babaji was the leader, the most respected of all the Vaishnavas at that time, the senior most. So, in that way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made an endeavor to establish the birthplace. He had also personally collected the money for constructing a temple at the yoga pit. But that didn't mean that everyone was just now accepting that Mayapur was the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There still were plenty who were saying, it's in Navadvip. And naturally, people would go there and drop many donations in Navadvip, so there was vested interest. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, what he did is he organized that parikrama to establish the Navadvip Dhammahatmya. And the Navadvip Dhammahatmya is basically the book that establishes the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then the entire Navadvip Mandal, of which the birthplace is the center. So his purpose was again to establish Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his birth site, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that first, his followers should read the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Then they should read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and only after reading Chaitanya Charitamrita would they be able to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. That was interesting. So, how is that? For us, it's the other way around. We start with Bhagavad Gita and then go on Bhagavatam and then Chaitanya Charitamrita. Well, for one reason, naturally the Bengali devotees were familiar with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so Chaitanya Bhagavat was natural reading for them. They already knew something, you know. So that was an extension of what they knew. But then the Chaitanya Charitamrita gave those same pastimes and a bit more, and it gave the full philosophy of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because without understanding the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, he said, first read Chaitanya Charitamrita, understand the mercy of Mahaprabhu, and then go to the Bhagavatam. In our case, we get that mercy from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Srila Prabhupada, and through Srila Prabhupada we also understand. But it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada already started giving lectures on the Chaitanya Charitamrita in New York in 1966. And Umapati was taking notes and wrote Sonoton with all O's, you know, Sonoton, because of Prabhupada's Bengali accent. So in that way, although his audience had no idea, but Prabhupada from the beginning emphasized the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, because without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, how can we go to Vrindavan, which is ultimately where Bhagavatam is taking us. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was like that, very much establishing the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not only the son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, but he was greatly inspired by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. His principal meditation was on the mission of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and he was carrying forward that mission that Srila Bhakti Vinod had started. And as his father had started various publications, he also continued publications. He had various magazines or newspapers, a daily one, a weekly one, a monthly one. And these were not just newsletters, but rather they were widely distributed and widely read. At that time in Calcutta, even during the time of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, there people were becoming modern. It was a time when the intellectuals in Calcutta were open to the international world, because the British were there in Calcutta, and things were not like they used to be before, just India with its own culture isolated from the world. But India was now in communication with the culture of the world. So a group of intellectuals in Calcutta, educated people, who were sensitive to the British system, and many were educated in the British system, were now interested in communicating about the Vedic tradition to the modern world. For example, and there were many English who were also interested. For example, on the Maidan in Calcutta, there was Fort Williams. And Fort Williams was actually the base of Orientalists who came from England, who came there to study the tradition of India. And in the Bhadra Lok, the intellectuals of Calcutta were trying to present that philosophy of India in a more contemporary way, right, than just rather in the Vedic traditional way of Srotapanta, where you just hear Vedic literature for so many years. But they tried to systematically categorize the knowledge and present it in that way. That knowledge is being studied today in the modern world. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was communicating in that way. And in one of his periodicals, the Gaudiya, at one point he was responding to an article that had been written by a prominent personality. And that prominent personality in Calcutta, in the literary scene, had made an outright attack on the Vaishnavas. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he had basically exposed the Vaishnavas as sahajas. He had delineated the Vaishnavas as being totally corrupt, a bunch of lazy people, not following any principles, and so on and so on. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a very strong article about the bona fide Sampradaya, the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishna Sampradaya. And he was representing that Sampradaya in such a powerful way in that article that the writer of the article read it. He read this article published by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he responded to it with an apology. He said, after reading that article, I realized that actually there still is a bona fide line of Vaishnavas, and that the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are still alive and in the form of Saraswati Thakur. He recognized Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as a bona fide representative of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way, his newsletters were very engaged. You know, they were not just kind of propaganda newsletters, you know, with something about Krishna, but they were very engaged. It's interesting that we see Srila Prabhupada doing the same thing in 1944, when we see Srila Prabhupada with difficulty bringing out a Back to Godhead magazine. He is writing articles which are engaging in the circumstances of the time. Srila Prabhupada writes editorials about the war, the frenzy of love and the frenzy of hate. An article how when there is great love for one's country, that has a counter sight. Yes, that anything material has always its counterside. In the material world, love for one means hate for something else. I love warm weather, I hate cold. I love sweet, I hate bitter. One thing, you know, it's like contrasting the dualities of the material world. So Srila Prabhupada wrote about that, about undue love for one's country leads to undue hate for other countries, basically. And it was the same spirit, the very same spirit of his own spiritual master, to engage with actual topics. Our Back to Godhead magazine for a long time was carrying a feature called Srila Prabhupada Speaks Out. And in many issues that was published. And when Srila Prabhupada speaks out, it was always on contemporary issues. One issue, other issue, and in this way, just dealing with the contemporary conceptions of modern society. That was sattva vritti, following in the footsteps of his spiritual master. On this day of the disappearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada, it is very important to see how much Srila Prabhupada just continued the spirit of his spiritual master, the very same spirit, that hammering mood, on like that, as Srila Prabhupada called it, karate. He said, you find the weak spot and you just keep on hammering on it. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had that same style, finding the weak spot and just smashing it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, as a preacher, was also very innovative. Like I explained in the theistic exhibition, he put a worldly cultural exhibition around it to pull in more people. Here in Mayapur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had his headquarters, the Chaitanya Math, and there he arranged to receive also prominent leaders from the British community. And for them, he was ready to have food brought in that they could eat, non-vegetarian. But, okay, not that it was cooked by his people, but it was served to them by outside people. And he allowed that so that they would come. So he was ready to preach according to time, place, and circumstances. And here we see how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is in Mayapur with the same vow as Haridas Thakur, and to chant a billion names of the Lord, which at 300,000 names a day, which takes 10 years to complete. And he did that vow and sat in his little thatched hut, and even when it rained in the rainy season, and it rains buckets here in the rainy season, he was not taking time off chanting to fix the roof, but rather hold up his umbrella and kept on chanting. So he was that same Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who he was ready to preach this Krishna consciousness in the modern world. And in order to do so, he was ready to make external adjustments. And he was riding in a motor car double buttoned kind of long overcoat, sitting in that car. How could a sadhu wear sewn cloth? Even in our Gurukul today, no sewn cloth. Because traditionally, in Vedic culture, no sewn cloth. That's for the Visayi. That's for the sense gratifiers who try to look beautiful. Kurtas is a Muslim dress, right? Certainly not a dress for a Vaishnava. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was ready to make adjustments. He was criticized for it also. Some Babajis who were afraid of him, but at the same time critical of him, said behind his back, when he arrived in the car, they said behind his back, what kind of follower of Rupa Goswami is this? What kind of follower of the Goswamis is this, driving around like that, dressed like this? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta just overheard them and turned around and snapped, yes, a follower of the Goswamis, who is taking up the mission of the Goswamis to preach the message of the Goswamis, not one who is merely imitating the Goswamis. So, in this way, he established his mission. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur built a bridge from tradition to modernity. And he went over that bridge. He left that, at least externally, external ways of that tradition, but internally kept the essence intact and did not compromise an inch. But externally, yes, for Yukta Vairagya, he was ready. He used to say, nobody should drive in cars, nobody should use trains, nobody should fly in planes, but for the Vaishnavas. I think that would be a great idea. I'm all for it. Empty planes, four seats. That could be fantastic. Anyway, so he brought Krishna consciousness, made it accessible for us. If we would all have to live in grass huts and sit in the rainy season under an umbrella chanting Hare Krishna, I don't know how long we would last, you know. It might be difficult, might be very difficult. So he made Krishna consciousness accessible to modern people. He established what Yukta Vairagya actually means. He put the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya, of Rupa Goswami, in practice. And he explained, he established that each thing in this world has its Hari Sambandha Vastu. The Hari Sambandha Vastu of any object is its the relationship that it has in the service of the Lord. Everything in this world has a relationship in the service of the Lord. And when we can use it in the service of the Lord, was his point, we should use it in the service of the Lord. Not like, then we can use it, you know, if it's possible, then it's all right. No, we must use it. Therefore, Brihad Mridanga, not just Mridanga, but the big Mridanga, the printing press, which will reach much further than the coal, than the Mridanga made of clay. So in this way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had that vision and drove his mission very, very strongly. He was very much, well, he had a high standard for his ashram residence. Right? He said that 4 hours sleep is enough for the ashram residence. So, okay, good luck. For sannyasis, he said that they shouldn't wear shoes. Right? That was in that month, not in this one. So, not that anyone to help me throw my shoes away now. but he was setting a very high standard in that way of surrender, and the mission was simply everyone. Everyone was meant to preach and to somehow or other take up this mission of preaching. That was his expectation. Preaching was in the foreground for every member of the Gaudiya Math. I want to read a few quotes. because we all know that the English of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came from the dictionary. We know that he taught himself English from the dictionary, and it's noticeable because one needs a dictionary to kind of understand it. Even those who are proficient in English will need a dictionary from time to time when they read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's writings. So some quotes there are some quotes which are known as the Upadeshavali, and this Upadeshavali means the essence of all instructions. So I'll read a few of them. There's a list of 64, and it's too much to read all 64, I think, but we'll read some. So we'll start with the first one. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions in Sikshastakam, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, is the only motto of the Gaudiya Math. So that's what I said. Preaching is the main purpose. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the only enjoyer. Everyone and everything else is the object of his enjoyment. So those are powerful statements. Just each of the statements is a meditation. Everyone else is the object of his, everyone and everything else is the object of Krishna's enjoyment. Anyone who does not serve Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is ignorant and a killer of himself. To learn to tolerate is one of the most important responsibility of those living in the mat. So everyone living in the temple must learn to tolerate. Rupa Nuga devotees offer all glory to the original source instead of depending on their own strength. So far each one, very strong meditation. I'll skip a little bit. We are not pious, sinful, or learned, or ignorant. We are the carriers of the dust of the feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Hari, and we are initiated by the mantra Kirtanya Sadahari. So alright, our meditation is not how pious we are, how sinful we are, how learned we are, or how ignorant we are. That is not our meditation. Our meditation is simply, we are carriers of the dust of the feet of the Supreme Lord. And we always chant Hare Krishna. So to carry the dust of the Lord means, first of all, to bow down. If you don't bow down, you can't get any dust of the feet. You have to bow down to get that. To bow down means to bow down one's will, one's independence, to be completely surrendered to the will of Krishna. So to carry the dust of the feet of the Lord means to be the instrument of the will of the Lord and nothing else, and to always chant Hare Krishna. And to not worry how pious we are, how fallen we are, simply try to be the instrument. That is the point. Meditate on being the instrument. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta himself he was so learned, right? But he was not interested in learning for learning's sake. He was interested to establish the position of pure devotional service. There was one English professor, Professor Suthers, who entered into a discussion with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he came from a Christian perspective, and he said that in Christianity, the love that is expressed for Jesus Christ is is love that exists in a pure form without any inebriety. Whereas in the Hindu tradition, the love that is expressed between Radha and Krishna is rather touched by some perversity. He was making a mundane projection on the loving exchanges of Radha and Krishna. So then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got into that and gave an explanation of rasa theology, and he explained how this should not be mistaken for the ordinary mundane exchanges between men and women, but rather that this is the expression of pure devotional service, an exchange between the pure devotee and the Lord. So the professor was still, after that explanation, sort of a little bit, not completely on board with it. So then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta volunteered a further explanation. And he said, you see, it is just like a perpendicular angle. There is no contractedness. And in the same way, there is no question of any, and as there's no contractedness, like in an ordinary angle, right? There is no question of any contamination in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And the professor got lost in that explanation. And he changed the subject. And later, wherever that professor went, he was glorifying Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as an intellectual giant, as a man of great stature and saintliness, and he was greatly, greatly impressed. In this way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was engaging his learning in convincing people about pure devotional service. Although he was the most learned, he was not interested in showing off. He was also, in that way, he was truly, truly humble, and therefore he was not interested in being great. He explained the difference between Ekalavya and Arjuna on one occasion in a lecture, and he established how it may appear that, you know, we know that Ekalavya also had come to Dronacharya and wanted to be a student, but he was rejected because he was not from a Kshatriya background and therefore didn't have proper principles. He was rather a Nisada, someone who had no cultural principles, and therefore Dronacharya didn't want to give him that great power of having all these destructive weapons in his hands, because he might just at one point misuse that power. So anyway, but Ekalavya still made a statue out of clay of Dronacharya, began to worship it and practiced. And then he became a very expert archer, and one day there was this dog that was with the Pandavas, and they were sort of hunting and going into the forest, and then there was this forest dweller, Ekalavya, and the dog kind of followed him. Ekalavya was dressed in an animal skin and the dog was barking at him. And then Ekalavya turned around and shot 7 arrows to seal the mouth of that dog. So no more barking, which, you know. So Arjuna was very impressed. Arjuna could see that this Ekalavya is incredibly expert. And then when he inquired from who he had learned this art of fighting, then Ekalavya folded his hand and said, from my guru, Dronacharya. So then, like, Arjuna's like, turned to Dronacharya and said, but You promised that you would make me the greatest archer in the world. And here is this Ekalabhya. So Dronacharya, the story is that Dronacharya said, "So you are accepting me as your guru, yes." He said, "Then you have learned the art from me, but you've never paid dakshin. You have to give dakshin." "Yes, I'll give whatever you want. Then give me the thumb of your right hand." So it's such a heavy story, right? And Ekalavya cut the thumb and gave it. Yeah. The ladies all made like faces like But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was not sentimental about the story at all. Not at all. He was just cutting into Ekalavya, and he said, "No, Ekalavya, he wanted to be great. He was not really serving his guru. He just wanted name, fame, and glory. And that is why he did it so. If he would have really been a dedicated disciple, a dedicated follower of Dronacharya, then he would not have practiced with the clay statue, because the order was no, you are not qualified to be accepted." So he didn't accept his order. So he didn't really accept him as a guru, only externally, in name, for name's sake. "I'm the follower of Dronacharya." But actually his real purpose was not to be a servant of Dronacharya, but to become a great and famous archer. And therefore he was disqualified. And therefore, although a drastic act, cut the thumb, absolutely, but think of what disturbance he could have caused to the world, having all these astras and so on, celestial weapons. No, better cut the thumb. Take it away. Drastic, but correct. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was a sadhu who cuts. He said, the spiritual master is like a priest who raises the sacrificial knife ready to cut the impurities from the heart of the disciple. He was a sadhu who would cut. His words were strong and cutting. He was not a sentimentalist, carrying forward with some of his words. My advice is, do not criticize others. Try to rectify yourself. A pure devotee knows that everyone is the spiritual master. Therefore, a pure devotee can be Jagat Guru. Okay, let's read a little further. Preaching without practicing is nothing but a ritual of karma kanda. This material nature, which is averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is an examination hall. Tolerance, humbleness, appreciation of others, etc., are favorable to develop our devotion to Hari. So here we are in the examination hall, and the test we have to pass is the one of tolerance, humbleness, appreciation of others, and all these things. And the material world is an examination hall. Such a sharp intellect, such a incredibly crystal clear presentation of Krishna consciousness that cuts through all illusion to the bone, right? In that way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was recognized as a great and powerful acharya. And wherever he went in India, from east to west to south, he was greatly respected. It is said that he would travel by train to India, and he caused great delays to the trains, because whenever the train would pull into a station, people would come and do Guru Puja. So the train ran many hours behind, But that was fine, because India in those days was still so pious that they were happy to have the train run so many hours late for the Guru Puja. Oh, very nice. So this spirit of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was recognized by all as a great saintly personality. And those who were in disagreement with him could not face him. He used to confront people. He was known as to grab Mayavadis by the cloth and challenge them about their philosophy. So when they saw him coming, they would turn around or make a detour. I mean, nobody would mess with him. He was known as Acharya Keshari, which means the lion guru. And that lion guru had a lion disciple in Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who carried forward his mission very faithfully. As Srila Prabhupada said, I had many godbrothers who were very, very qualified, many very learned, some much more than me. Then how is it that this miracle happened to me? I can think of only one reason. It is because I 100% followed the order of my spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada 100% tried to implement the order of his spiritual master, the mood of his spiritual master, the emphasis of his spiritual master, the systems implemented by his spiritual master, the teachings of his spiritual master. Very, very faithfully, Srila Prabhupada tried to bring that forward. And in this way, you practically cannot separate them. Right? Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada are like this. And in the same way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So much focused on the will of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, on the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He would name his deities that he installed in the various temples. First he would give them the name Vinod, and then some additional name of Krishna. So like this, he was just meditating on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these three acharyas especially came to bring this Krishna consciousness to us in a form that we can practice it. Now, in this day and age, when Vedic culture is impossible. And therefore, this is not just a day that we are observing the disappearance day of a previous acharya, one of the previous acharyas. This day is all the previous acharyas have made essential contributions to our sampradaya, and we all depend on their mercy. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has carved out space for us. There is more and more, as you speak about such a personality. It is like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was glorifying Haridas Thakur. It said there was so much to say, he needed five mouths, to glorify Haridas Thakur simultaneously. I'm looking at the time, and I don't know how to end this lecture in time, because there is so much more to say that is all actually very valuable. All I can say is you can do it yourself today by taking a little time, read something of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, read some of his words on the internet, or read some of his books. Connect a little bit today with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, there's also the worship in the temple, which starts at what time? 12 o'clock. At 12 o'clock, Pushpanjali in the temple. So like that, this day is that opportunity to make that connection. If we do this on this day and make a special endeavor, then we can get the mercy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And yeah, that is the essence. So many things I didn't say. I would have liked to. There's one thing I just want to say. Now it's about Gandharvika Giridhari, the deities that are there in the Chaitanya Mat, and then the four acharyas who are seated around the deity, because that's so important. That one of his missions was to establish the Chaitanya Parampara, the Chaitanya Sampradaya, as a Metta Sampradaya, a Sampradaya that sits like on top of all the other Sampradayas, and that all the other Sampradayas ultimately cannot completely find fulfillment, but will find fulfillment in that Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the future, there will be one Sampradaya, all Sampradayas united in this Sampradaya of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we see such a giant exponent of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let us spend time worshipping him today, and let us then pray to him for mercy. And surely on this day, on this disappearance day, he is especially present, and his mercy is especially available, especially for those who make a special endeavor. So it's a wonderful opportunity to deepen our eternal relationship with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Suresh Prabhu.
All right, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was so faithful to the parampara and yet so fresh in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. Our Srila Prabhupada was so faithful to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and yet so fresh and innovative and creative in his presentation. As we endeavor to follow Srila Prabhupada and yet not imitate him, sometimes we're criticized as being stuck in the past. We're just stuck on the details of 1975. And yeah, sometimes we're criticized for being just concocting everything and ruining Prabhupada. So what is the key to being faithful and yet fresh?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Phew.
In 108 words or less.
That's a question and a half, I would say. What is the key to being faithful and chaste and yet being fresh? In one word, the key is purity. That's where it begins. These two acharyas, due to great purity, right, were especially able to do many of these things, or the three acharyas actually, because also Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was equally faithful and innovative and fresh. For us to continue in that way, we should not be innovative for the sake of being fresh. We should maintain the original pure form of the tradition where possible. Because that form is more supportive. Just like here in Navadvip 500 years ago, at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the situation was more supportive than the modern one, with motorbikes flying around and so on. Just not against motorbike, but just give an example of the modern world. Different, all possible, within this modern world, but we can engage the products of Ugra Karma in the service of the Lord. But the products of Ugra Karma will then give transcendental benefit, but they will not completely lose their Ugra nature. You use a computer, you still get square eyes and a hunchback. You use, a car is still a dangerous, destructive machine, right? And a moment of inattention can create a bloody mess. So, in that way, but freshness and innovativeness, where it can push forward the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without adulterating it, oh yes, that freshness is very needed, very much required. But where we can keep the original form, let's keep it. Let's keep it. Because this original form is a source of strength. Just when Srila Prabhupada saw the devotees in dhotis and tilak, he commented, just like Vaikuntha man. Right? Of course, we can preach in with tie and suit or jeans and t-shirt. That's fine. But that statement of Srila Prabhupada still stands, Vaikuntha man. So adhering to the tradition where possible, but freshness for the sake of pushing on the mission without compromising the essence of the teachings. And then a final word on that. And while we're trying to put that into practice, good luck. Thank you very much. Okay, I don't know how long we're going on, but I'll take the last question and then...
Just the previous acharyas generally understood to be gopis, like Chakravarti, very elaborate personalities who appeared at different times to push the preaching mission on. So do you think we could expect such personalities to appear in the future? Or is it that we're expected to come up to the mark ourselves, so to speak?
I think the question is that in the tradition, the previous acharyas were all very great personalities, many of them being gopis or shakti avesh avatars and so on. Can we expect in the future again such personalities to appear? Well, I don't rule it out that even in the present some of them have appeared. What to speak of the future? Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Tirubhav Mahamahotsav Ki Jai.